By way of introduction to our reading tonight, which is in Luke chapter 8, which we'll come to in a moment, I'd just like to tell you about one of my experiences in the last 28 years. I haven't applied for many vicar jobs, but I have seen quite a few job descriptions. They're called in the Anglican jargon the parish profile. If a parish is looking for a vicar, what they do is to write out a description of their parish and a description of the sort of person they're looking for. And there's one kind that I avoid like the plague, never apply for this job. I say to myself, it's where the parish is basically saying in its subtext, we're perfect. There's nothing wrong with us at all. In every single thing we do, revival is breaking out. The last vicar was Jesus. We're looking for someone just like her or him. The merest hint of something that could be improved is in the word potential. Does it sound in other job descriptions? This ministry has a great deal of potential, which kind of suggests maybe there's room for improvement. I applied for one job, though, which had a parish profile at the opposite extreme. It was so refreshingly authentic, so honest. It was like the proverbial Christmas letter, which described everything that had gone wrong. And so I threw my hat in the ring, and my wife, Rukli, and I, we went to this city, which will remain anonymous. As we drove into it, we saw a ski slope, and my Austrian wife thought, that could be a prophetic sign. And we arrived, there were eight other candidates. They hadn't bothered with the hassle of shortlisting, just invited everybody, I think, who applied. Some of them, like me, with their partner, husband or wife or whoever. And we were given a parish tour. Refreshingly authentic parish tour. It began in the vicarage, three-store barn of a place, hadn't been lived in for 2 years, hadn't been heated, hadn't been decorated for about five. Then went to the church with all the difficulties pointed out, site development project between 1 and 4 million, but the new vicar would sort that out. We went to an outreach project that was actually brilliant, but it was like in the city centre, a outreach shop run by ex-convicts. And finally in the evening, by which time there were only three of us left, we were faced with a sort of interrogation by 25 PCC members and five members of staff. My wife loved it. I was sort of picking up the vibe that this parish really did need Jesus. And the guy who got it had been a prison chaplain in Britain's toughest jail for 20 years. He's the man, I thought. Just like churches, individuals can give off the same vibe. There's the parish profile, which I'm going to use my pot here as Teflon-coated, squeaky clean. Nothing at all could possibly change it at all. To the other end of the spectrum, represented by my broken glass here. And churches, like individuals, can appear on the outside to be somewhere on this spectrum. Jesus, as we've seen in the last weeks throughout the Gospel of Luke, as we see through all of the Gospels, is not so concerned by who people are. How easy it is to put those we meet into one of these two camps of the sorted and the broken. But Jesus sees us very differently. He shows that actually everyone, however we appear, is actually extremely fragile. That we live in a fragile environment where storms and floods arise out of control, where the richest in the world lose literally billions in the last 3 days through a stock market crash. We live in a cosmos where a huge black hole apparently can explode. We live in a world where top civil servants lose their jobs, presidents can be impeached, and with one circumstance that arises like a hammer blow, suddenly life changes. You may know that better than I from your own experience. However we appear, who we are is fragile. Here we are, as it were. What a mess. And Jesus blesses, he heals, he restores those who come to him like that. Who bring, as it were, the reality of who they are, who we can get to know in those closest to us and those we share of something of our own shards with those we trust and know the best, and receive Jesus' healing represented by my glass that remains a fragile and precarious. And in tonight's reading in Luke chapter 8, which if you'd like to turn to it in your Bibles, we see two people who on the outside are these two opposite ends of the spectrum. One we'll hear of in the final two verses, who could appear to be like this. Highly respected, very successful. Esteemed by the whole of his first century culture in which he lives. And the other, most obviously, what a mess. But both of them, who I commend to myself, who I commend to you tonight, to follow them in that they come to Jesus in their own different needs, saying, Jesus, here I am, what a mess. So as we hear of these two people, one called Jairus and one whose name was Legion, we're going to see how Jesus, with a different kind of power, restores them in their brokenness.
So Luke 8:26-42. They sailed to the region of Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee. When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. For a long time, this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I beg you, don't torture me." For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hand and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places. Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. And they begged him repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into them, and he gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured. Then all the people of the region of Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return home and tell how much God has done for you." So the man went away and told all over the town how much Jesus had done for him. Now, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. Then a man named Jairus, a ruler of the synagogue, came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house, because his daughter, a girl of about 12, was dying.
You You couldn't get two more different people. From the man called Jairus, the synagogue ruler, high up in the religious pecking order. The synagogue ruler's job, a bit like you could say that of a vicar, the job was to keep order in the synagogue and to order worship. Respected man, a family man. But his ordered world, apparently so resilient, comes crashing down, a fatal illness to his 12-year-old daughter who's about to die. Pour away the ocean and sweep up the woods, for nothing now can ever come to any good. So W.H. Auden, bit of culture, how he describes the hammer blow of bereavements. And here he is coming before Jesus, as it were, saying, here I am. What a mess. And no matter what your status or mine, your gifts, your bank accounts, your achievements, here's the truth of the good news, that you and I need the healing that only Jesus is the source of. For some of us, like Jairus, maybe, it's taken a rude awakening like that to come face to face with that reality. And look at what Jairus does. He does exactly the same, using exactly the same words. Luke uses exactly the same words as describing the man at the other end of the social spectrum. It's called the Gerasene demoniac. You could call him the crazy guy. His name was Legion. He fell at Jesus' feet. And this man whose name was Legion, here he is. Here he is, not only on the inside, but him on the outside as well, in broken pieces. What a mess. He's been broken for years. Look at verse 27. Luke just says, it's a long time. He has no esteem in society. He's only got shame, as symbolized by the fact that he's naked. He's got no life, as is clear by where he lives. Can you see where he lives? It's in a graveyard. He's got no health. In Mark's gospel, it said he spends his days harming himself. Self-harm is not just a 20th and 21st century phenomenon. He's got no identity. His name is Legion because he's possessed by a legion of different forces and voices coming out of him. But he's got the one quality, the only quality that Jesus is looking for. And again, Mark in his gospel makes it really clear. Mark 5, verse 6 says, when Jesus landed on the shore, he ran to Jesus. That's what it says. In first century society, nobody ran. It was just a thing you didn't do in polite society. Well, this man is way beyond the pale of polite society. So why it's so extraordinary that the father runs to the prodigal son, especially as that's God. This man runs to Jesus. And even though he's got a crazed picture of Jesus, do not torture me, he knows that he needs Jesus in his brokenness. Even though he's not in his right mind, voices come out of him that aren't his. Something in him drives him to Jesus. I commend to myself, to yourself, his example. You see, we care a lot about how people appear and behave. I care a lot about how I appear and behave. Every day this week, you put on your makeup, and whether that is literal or metaphorical makeup, for whatever situations you go into, and we need that. But those who you are closest to, the makeup falls away, doesn't it, if you have that privilege? And Jesus' mission on earth is to bring the good news of God's kingdom to earth, that the broken relationship with your Father in heaven can be healed by me. He doesn't take away our fragility or our precariousness. He doesn't turn us into the resilient pot representing that. We remain the precarious, fragile disciple, but the one restored. Jesus told stories about this. He told a story of a rich fool who thought his money could save him. He told a story, another story, about a Pharisee, a religious man, who thought his respectability could save him. Do you know those stories? And in the same story comes a tax collector, a bit like Matthew, who we saw in the film, who receives the healing from heaven that this broken man who called himself Legion and the synagogue ruler who was called Jairus both get. You see, wherever we are on this spectrum, if you like, of how we appear, both ends come to Jesus essentially saying, here I am. What a mess. And just as it's only the sick who go to a doctor, so it's only those who come as they are who go to Jesus and get his healing. And Jesus puts them both back together. And here's a way that we're actually closer to this broken man at the beginning of our reading, the demon-possessed man, the man whose name was Legion. The way we're closer to him than could ever appear. After he receives his healing, look at verse 35. He's in his right mind. What does that look like? Well, he's still at Jesus' feet. Do you see that? Verse 35. He's still at Jesus' feet. He's been healed. He's in the same posture as when he was crazy, receiving his healing. But he knows that the posture of the first century pupil to a rabbi when the rabbi stopped was to be, as it were, at their feet. So this is where the healed man is. His shame, represented once upon a time by his nakedness, has been removed. How do we know that? He goes on just a few verses later, if you look, to tell the whole of the region. Everyone knew about him, about how Jesus had healed him. His shame has been taken away. He is a living, walking visual aid of what Jesus meant when he said, the evil one came only to steal and kill and destroy. And we are like, in extraordinary ways, that demoniac, because the evil one, the devil, would also with us steal our worth, would kill off all our relationships, would want to destroy ultimately our relationship with God. And Jesus goes on, John 10:10, I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. This is what life to the full looks like in Jesus' sight, to be changed from a broken person to a still fragile person, living precariously, but who's received the healing in their brokenness. We're invited this evening to come and receive the bread and the wine that we do every month in our evening service. And we're invited to come, as it were, with everything about us. The broken bits and also the restored bits, but above all, with the fragility that just living on earth actually means. That riches and status and achievement and all of this could so easily mask. We live in a country, you might know this, where one in four people last year suffered from some form of mental ill health, according to the NHS. Where, according to the latest ACAS report, 91 million working days, 91 million, were lost because of some kind of mental ill health. The world given for a whole range of troubles and torments, of unease across a whole spectrum, much of it hidden. It's the largest single source of illness, according to the NHS department measuring these things. We can appear as sorted as gyrus, but we're all of us living precariously, a word that comes from the Latin precari, meaning to pray. We are precarious people in need of prayer for the help of Jesus. I finish with this. At a secondary school assembly that I was taking, it may have been my last ever one, thinking about it, we were going to have in this Church of England secondary school, where unfortunately my daughter was one of the audience, we were about to have communion. And as the World Cup was going on at the time, I thought a brilliant visual aid to describe some theological point would be to do a couple of keepy-uppies. For those who don't know what that is, it's with a football and you keep it up on your foot. But sadly, since I last practiced, I used to be brilliant at that, I'd lost it. And the ball went from my right foot and, like in slow motion, skimmed the two chalices, pouring wine over the communion table. There it was. What a mess. My daughter in the sick form goes. But I thought in hindsight, and I did tell her this, I thought in hindsight, actually, what a great visual aid. If only I'd thought of it at the time. What a great visual aid for what God on the cross is honestly, actually doing. Our pristine communion tables, they are the meal Jesus invites us to. But the reality was a very messy thing. The cross is Jesus, God himself, entering into the mess, the physical pain, entering into the mess, the mental torment, entering into the mess of a world where the devil is out to steal and kill and destroy all it is of Jesus. And Jairus and this man called Legion and anyone else in the whole of human history, including you and me, can receive the life of Jesus represented by his blood outpoured, by his body broken, and raised again. This is the good news of the kingdom, that we come tonight broken and in need of Jesus in all our precariousness. As I invite the band to come forwards, we're invited to sing this song, which is a prayer that will lead us in to this meal, this sign that Jesus gives us of his incredible power to restore our fragile, precarious lives. Would you like to stand with me? Father God, as the man called Legion ran to Jesus and received his extraordinary healing for his extraordinary brokenness, we thank you that you gave life in all its fullness back to him. We thank you that you removed his shame. We thank you that he was a sign, as you call us to be, of all your goodness and amazing grace. That even in the broken vessels, like cracked or broken glasses that we are, you restore us that we might be filled again with your wholeness. Fill us afresh, we pray.